Hey, everybody, welcome back to our coverage from the show floor of Connected America 2025. I'm your host, Ben Thomas. You know, the number one conversation I've heard so far on the show floor centers around data centers and how our industry is continuing to support data centers as they grow. So I had a lot of questions naturally, so I wanted to bring on my next guest to answer a lot of those because you know a lot more than I do about the industry, and that's Brian Riley from Hexatronic. Brian, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Brian, got to ask, you know, folks who watch the show may not necessarily be familiar with either you or yourself or Hexatronic. Give us just a quick rundown about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I lead Hexatronic. We are a fully end-to-end airblown fiber solution that is atypical to the way most fiber providers build in the U.S. You know, I've spent 20 years as a fiber operator, as a network operator, and so I saw Hexatronic as a customer first and became a believer and had my own light bulb moment before I now am fortunate to have the opportunity to lead the business.
That's a great place to enter a business from, is being a fan of theirs and then right. Coming in. You know, Brian, you guys obviously serve a number of different verticals, use cases, right. And industries, but I want to talk specifically today about data centers. It literally is a business unit that you guys operate. What are some of the things that you guys are doing in that world?
Yeah, we have a number of offerings in the data center space. You know, with our fiber services group, we obviously sell to a lot of the hyperscalers, to a lot of the carriers that are doing connectivity for the hyperscalers. And they seem to be very focused on miniaturization. You know, their goal, to pick on Amazon, is to miniaturize the cables, put as much glass as possible within a conduit. And so we're fortunate that we offer some of the smallest micro cables out there. And so they love that stuff. We also have some sister businesses, one here in Texas called Data Center Systems. They focus a lot on design, build, deployment of data centers and participate a lot in the hyperscaler world.
You know, Brian, I think that most of us at this point are familiar with things like hyperscalers. We're familiar with Amazon. We're familiar with OpenAI wanting to build all these things. But what's really cool to see is that you now see sort of a miniaturization of the data center and a localization, right? Yeah. In the same way that we've seen that with sort of the power generation side of the world, folks want to have their own localized data centers as well. Is that a trend that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the days gone by, there were massive data centers in different geographies around the world, and we've seen information move closer to the users. Data centers are supporting that. And so now you'll see data centers at the city level. You're starting to see them at the multiple areas in the city level, getting closer and closer to the customer. Definitely a trend that we see out there.
Is it fair to call them edge data centers?
Yeah, I guess they're edge data centers. And I feel like this is all, it's all a cycle, right? You know, everything old is now new. We used to have all our data stored on a computer at our house. We moved it all to the cloud, and now the cloud's coming back to our house. So the ultimate edge data center will be data on your computer at your house at some point.
You mean the 4 terabyte drive I bought 15 years ago still relevant? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, there you go. That's where we're headed.
You know, it's interesting, and you know, whether it's the largest companies here or even some of the smaller service providers, it's been cool to see how folks fit into that ecosystem. But I want to ask sort of at scale, right, whether it's the hyperscaler level or whether it's more that edge data center, realistically, what are those infrastructure, especially fiber demands for some of these high bandwidth use cases in data centers?
Yeah, it's quite unique. So what's happening with the AI kind of revolution is the requirement for bandwidth has exploded. It's no longer where they're just looking for a large pipe, we'll say, to connect a data center. They're looking for a ton of glass and they want it to be dedicated. A lot of the hyperscalers are investing themselves, or they're paying carriers to invest with kind of, we'll call it express routes. So if I've got hyperscaler facilities in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta, I would want, you know, as the hyperscaler, to have a direct high density glass fiber line between those two cities. And it's leading to a lot of interesting kind of fiber builds that are going on out there.
You know, one of the things that I keep hearing people talk about at the show is sort of the public versus private fiber lines, right? And naturally, you want to be able to own some level of your own infrastructure, right? We talked about the world of power. Folks like to have that power gen on site and on-prem. Is that a demand that you're also seeing, not only just for data centers, but in general, where folks want to own those pipes that are on-prem for them?
Yeah, I think they do. To an extent, though, I think if you can keep it on-prem, they want to own that. But as soon as you start getting into the metro or the long-haul environment, you know, it's very difficult for an Amazon to pick on somebody to maintain, repair, and facilitate that multi-hundred mile link to their next AWS node. And so I think that's where they kind of make the shift, where they will leave it towards some other entity who may have expertise in that world to maintain and operate those facilities. So it kind of it goes from a kind of owned to a leased perspective between that on-prem, off-prem.
Well, it's interesting. You sort of talk about the subject matter expertise, not only of necessarily owning the private versus public right. networks, but also maintaining and operating, you know, the data centers and fiber lines in general. Those challenges sort of pop up as you maybe get outside of sort of the telco world, right? You see our industry serving industries like healthcare and yeah. hospitality and, you know, even in rural applications as well. What are some of those places and use cases where you're seeing sort of the demand for data and high bandwidth applications continue to rise?
Yeah, I mean, it's data is one of those things that I don't know if we'll ever see a peak. The demand is insatiable. And so I think that, you know, we're seeing obviously the data center environment is drawing a lot of focus. It's the buzzword. Everybody's talking about AI and hyperscalers. There still is quite a bit of a demand, even from the consumer perspective. You know, one of the things that we kind of skip over because the data center environment became the sexy hot topic is residential broadband and small communities and rural broadband are such an enabler of society. You know, you think about work from home, learn from home, and even telehealth. So many of these communities don't have the infrastructure and probably will never have the infrastructure to have a world-class Mayo Clinic type healthcare facility, but they'll have access to those facilities through things like telehealth and learning similarly through telelearning. And I think, you know, when you look at a rural community that has that inequality of access, there still is a tremendous hunger there that's driving a lot of adoption. And certainly the BEAD program that's been in the news a lot as of late is a component to that. Yeah. But there's also a lot of private money that's pushing, we'll call it the smaller county seat type communities further along in that fiber journey.
Well, you brought up rural and maybe some of these co-op driven areas. You know, for a long time, I think folks in our industry have assumed that, hey, you know, Starlink and 5G coverage yeah. will kind of manage that load. It really hasn't done a great job because you've got network saturation, you've got weather contingencies, you've got all these different things. So we are at a point where that demand really right. has said, hey, whether it's building a cloud-centric data center, an edge data center, right. or pulling, you know, our own fiber infrastructure set up, those demands are there. How have you seen sort of that rural world evolve from an infrastructure needs standpoint?
Slowly. You know, honestly, it's, yeah, I think you're spot on where the days of we assume fixed wireless or Starlink are going to solve it, they won't. I mean, there are certainly areas.
If it's cloudy outside, it's not solving anything.
I mean, there are certainly areas that Starlink is a great solution for.
Yeah.
There's mountainous regions. It's probably never going to make sense to build fiber right. to the top of a peak for a cabin. It's a great solution for Starlink. The reality is, though, those are niche kind of solutions, and especially with fixed wireless. You know, the 5G operators, the mobile operators, it makes total sense why they're doing it because it's a pretty easy revenue generator for them when they've got the infrastructure to support the cellular devices, you know, within that community. But it's not a real capable capacity network that's going to allow you to kind of own a community. Where we see the rural networks going, I think, is really into that, you know, public-private partnership component. How do they attract investors? How do they potentially attract service providers? Some of it is driven by healthcare. When communities have healthcare opportunities or even education. I've seen a lot of K-12 fiberization that's happened. And what's interesting about the kind of the K-12 fiberization is if you build fiber to all the schools within a community, you often have residents right by those schools. I think it's just kind of an incremental step process that's moving towards it. It is slow though. You know, I know there's a lot of communities. There's over half the US doesn't have access to fiber. Most of that is in those rural communities and they're probably getting impatient at this point.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a really interesting point that healthcare actually is a massive driver. And you yeah. see this not only even in our industry, but in a number of different industries where things like EHRs, and yep. Which are electronic health records, sure. and demand for telehealth and real-time communication and feedback, healthcare really has been the bridge for a lot of those rural areas. And would you say they're solving that? I mean, I know we sort of talked about the data center side as well. Are they seeking typically to solve that through localized data center building, or is it, hey, you know, we're going to run a pipe from Dallas down to, you know, Waco, Texas, which is not a small town. Don't yell at me right. for saying that. But are they trying to attach to existing infrastructure? Are they trying to build their own infrastructure? Maybe a combination of both.
It's a combination of both. Obviously, attaching to existing infrastructure is probably preferred. Capital to build any kind of fiber pipe is expensive, right? And so when they have something they can leverage, I think that's always the first choice. But a lot of rural America doesn't have access to fiber. There's a lot of hospitals that probably don't have the greatest connectivity solutions, and it limits their ability to treat patients. It actually truly does draw back the healthcare availability in those communities, because if you think about it, it's hard to attract doctors to rural communities when they have limited resources and all those things. And so when you're looking for the expert, which I think any of us would that would have a healthcare need, we all want to talk to the best doctor. That doctor may not be in my community, and it may be somebody who's able to be accessed a state away or a county away. And I think, you know, those are the types of things that are drawing the pipes to be built to those facilities. But it's also more than just the hospitals. You know, healthcare is so interesting in terms of how people access it. People access it at schools.
Yeah.
Sometimes they access it at community centers, even at their home. You know, a lot of retired population, you can avoid a lot of doctor visits and a lot of exposure to risk factors by allowing them to have, you know, high quality fiber broadband. They can check in and monitor the patient without the patient constantly having to go in maybe on a weekly basis to get checked or you know, things like that.
Yeah. You know, Brian, we talk a lot about healthcare and it's sort of being the gateway to connectivity, but what are some of those use cases maybe that we don't necessarily get to talk about as much as an industry that we're serving our communities with?
Yeah, you know, the other thing that's going on in rural America is it's wireless as well. You know, wireless was a great foundational kind of spur for more fiber building to the U.S., building to macro towers and, you know, turning the maps different colors based on the carrier that they like to do their ad campaigns from. But the rural communities, you know, tend to be kind of the last place invested. And it's driven by density. And so that likewise, they're kind of still in this cusp of expanding coverage and expanding capacity. And a lot of that comes down to building towers. I mean, it sounds crazy, but you know, they're still out there building large towers and small cells. And when you consider the things, you know, surrounding a rural community like smart agriculture and all those kinds of things, there's a lot yet to be done. That's still demanding more connectivity and more fiber and all those things in rural America.
Well, it's crazy. I had a conversation literally 2 weeks ago with John Deere talking about their new autonomous technology that they came out with at CES this year and the bandwidth requirements that has, right?
Right.
Because it relies on GPS, but it also requires, you know, a certain level of connectivity. And
sure.
I think that we tend to shoehorn rural America into the applications that we think are important to them. It's why does the family compound in XYZ Texas need, you know, fiber? Well, we're not, you know, that's great to have, but we're not really talking about that. We're talking about access to telehealth and to care and to having connectivity with family members.
Sure.
It's almost to a point now where, especially post-COVID, connectivity has become a true utility, right? It's almost a given in the same way that water and plumbing and electrical connectivity is. And we have to meet that demand. I mean, have you seen the same thing where connectivity really is a true utility at this point?
I think so. You know, it used to be a nice to have kind of thing. It's become a must have. You know, I think that 20 years ago, the industry used to look at pay television as kind of the breadwinner because nobody would ever stop paying their cable bill. They need that. I think internet has become that new staple where everybody has got to have the internet at their home, whether it be for entertainment, whether it be for work, for medicine, for learning. There's so many applications today that it's gone from a luxury that might allow you to watch Netflix to the way you earn a living or the way you develop yourself or care for yourself. And it's absolutely shifted the way people look at it.
Well, Brian, I love how the conversation really has evolved that we've been having today, right? Starting in the world of data centers and then naturally flowing to rural applications, rural connectivity. But I want to land the plane the same place we started.
Sure.
You know, we talk about data centers. We talk about 25, 26, 27 as these things keep getting built. What would you say to somebody who's finding their way into this conversation for the first time? Maybe it's from a service provider. Maybe it's from a telco standpoint. Maybe it's somebody outside the industry that's coming in for the first time. What would you say to them as they're finding their way in these conversations for the first time?
I would say, good luck. There's a lot to learn.
It's a good time to be a GC right now.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and that's, I think that's the crux of this business. It's expensive, right? It's very, very expensive to build fiber. Everybody needs it, but nobody wants to pay for it because it's not cheap. And it's not cheap because it's not easy. If you're a GC digging through the mountains and the rocks and all that, I mean, it's arduous work. And I think that, you know, where we've gone as an industry, you know, the U.S. is an anomaly compared to most of the world, where the way that we build fiber in the U.S. has been relatively unchanged for 30 right. years. The cost structure has gotten more pressure and more pressure. 10 years ago, when we were building to those cell towers, the ARPU was great. And you could fund a lot of fiber building for a very expensive cell tower right. service. Obviously, cost economics have come down, and it's putting more and more pressure. But the guy that's digging the ditch isn't getting paid less. He's right. getting paid more right. probably. And so you kind of have this dichotomy of economics in the business. And so, you know, everybody's kind of looking for, how do I improve the efficiency of my network build, drive cost out of it, and still find the ways to achieve a return to connect that community, to connect that hospital or the tower, you know, whatever it is.
You know, Brian, I think this is a conversation really that's just beginning. And I know a lot of folks, a lot of audience members will have some questions. How can folks reach out to Hextronic?
Yeah, so our website, hextronic.com, is a great place to reach us. We would love to hear from you and talk about how we might be able to overcome some of those cost barriers in building fiber.
Well, look, hey, I'll tell you what, I've known the company for probably 6 or 7 weeks at this point. And I tell you, as I learn more and more, not only about the company, but some of the great work that you guys are doing, I can tell you that you're making a real impact, right? It's easy for folks to come in and say, hey, you know, XYZ company's coming and trying to make a buck. But the difference between you guys and a lot of folks, even folks that are here, I'm not gonna say it too loud, but is that you're genuinely helping and serving these communities, because you've got so many people coming in for the first time asking these questions. You've got yep. these municipalities, co-ops, folks in rural applications who are asking these questions, and you truly are there to serve those folks. So I thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And look, Brian, thanks so much for coming on the show today, and thank you all for tuning in as well. Be sure to stay tuned for more of our coverage from Connected America 2025.